You know, we've had over 100 Grit and Grace listeners email us to tell us about their struggles with perfectionism and people pleasing.
And we have loved hearing from every single one of you.
So what listener concern are we focusing on today?
I think my biggest issue is my inability to say no. First of all, I don't want to let anyone down. Second of all, I really believe I can do it all. Worst of all, I'm chronically overwhelmed and I'm failing all over the place. I know in my rational mind that the right thing to do is to stop and think and say no to save all of us from this failure, but my crazy heart and mouth just say yes.
Well, this is Sherry Gregory.
And I'm Amy Carroll.
And you're listening to Grit and Grace, Good Girls Breaking Bad Rules.
Today, we're wrapping up our Overwhelmed series by bringing back one of our favorite guests, Kathy Lipp. Kathy is the author of 17 books, a popular retreat speaker, founder of Communicator Academy, and one of the most generous people I've ever had the privilege to call friend.
So if you feel chronically overwhelmed and struggle to say no, Kathy's got hope, humor, and how-tos for you. Okay, so this is the day I have been looking forward to.
Oh, gosh.
I have been waiting to put Kathy Lipp on the hot seat ever since she put me on the hot seat. Because you don't put an HSP on the hot seat. What was she thinking?
You're a professional girl. Suck it up.
My favorite phrase. But the problem is, when I said that we were going to put Kathy Lipp on the hot seat, she said, bring it on.
I wouldn't have slept last night, Kathy. This is amazing.
I just figure everything's editable, you know?
I have asked the Overwhelmed launch team for their best scenarios and questions. They know we're putting you on the hot seat to kind of wrap up the overarching series of being overwhelmed. And so I'm just going to hit you with their questions and see what you come up with.
Okay.
The first one is they wanted you to share your best, meaning your worst, overwhelm story and how you would handle it now with the tools that we put in the book.
Okay. So let me just say, I don't handle everything perfectly by a long shot. I'll give you an example of just recently and how poorly I handled it and how I'm trying to come out of it. I recently got some feedback, let's just put it that way, on social media, and I did not handle it well. I handled it publicly instead of privately. What overwhelms me, and it still overwhelms me, is when I'm sharing my heart and I'm shamed for it.
Mm.
So I'm starting off with a heavy one, guys. Let me just be honest with you. It really wasn't as big as a deal as it could have been. Instead of going to the person, or I did take a couple of let's get out from overwhelmed steps. Instead of responding immediately, I prayed. I did some breathing, which often helps me. And then I responded poorly. So like we said, this is not a magical formula. Then the person came to me and said, you know, I want to apologize. And what I did from there was then I started to do some healthy steps. So I asked for forgiveness. Mm-hmm. I talked with my husband about it, who is somebody who is good to process this with, because sadly, Roger is never automatically on my side. I mean, he is in a global thing, but when I want to pick a fight and blame people, he never will just say, you're right, Kathy. You know, you're always right. No, I'm never always right. So I talked about it with him. And then I decided this was the interesting part. Do I work on restoring this relationship, or do I say I need better boundaries in this relationship?
Ooh.
And so that was a really important question.
Ooh.
Because I think both of those paths are okay.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a relationship that I want to work on restoration with. And guys, it was tough, but it was good because of this encounter online and her handling it poorly and me handling it poorly and both of us going to each other and confessing to each other and asking for forgiveness and having a really good talk about why that happened.
Mm-hmm.
I reacted because I was feeling shamed. She attacked because she was feeling jealousy.
Ooh.
Yeah, when we figured out the core of what was going on, I now know how to help her better, and she now knows how to help me better.
Hmm.
So it was restorative and it was good, but it took ugly to get there. So I just want to encourage our overwhelmed people that it doesn't automatically go from overwhelmed to zero.
Mm-hmm.
It goes from overwhelmed to ugly behavior, to praying about it, to walking it out, to resolution, to good. And so it's not a straight path, but the tools help me.
Oh, that is so good. Listening to you, my first reaction is, I want to go through something like that. I mean, I don't want to go through the mess. No, I don't. But no, I want the end result.
Sherry, you often get the end result. And we don't have to go through a fight to do it. Because you and I will talk about something. And you always come back and say, you know, the reason I did what I did was because of X or Y. I feel like your brain is constantly processing on this stuff.
Well,
don't you?
That would be true.
Yes, that is Sherry. And she's willing to own it. And that was what's so powerful about your story, mm-hmm. is that you don't need better boundaries when everybody's willing to own their part.
Exactly. Oh, that's so good.
Quotable?
Yeah, that's totally quotable.
Oh,
it's
Chose the right one but sometimes you don't know whether you chose the right one or not until after the ugly conversation.
Well, and after the first exchange, I was still at, I need better boundaries. And then it was interesting. She said she's reading Overwhelmed and some other books, and it's just kind of kicking her. And it's like, hey, we can still learn. We can still grow. And I'm grateful for this person in my life because she walked through it with me and valued the relationship. So I'm grateful.
And what's occurring to me is my tactic has tended to be, I don't want to engage in the hard conversation, so I avoid conflict. Mm. Avoidance is not boundaries.
No, it's so true. Avoidance isn't boundaries. Avoidance is what's going to happen 3 or 4 times before you blow up at the person and say, you did this, 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 this. They have no idea.
And then they might need to set boundaries against me.
Right, exactly. And
oh,
so,
my goodness.
You know, I'm grateful that I went through this, but it was really tough at the time.
So I was going to ask the one, I like this. She said, in reference to the planner and not living a life of playing catch up, any tips about how you can catch up so that you can start not playing catch up? How does that work?
Yeah, so I would think there are a couple of different steps. Look at your coming week. So you don't be overwhelmed. I was going to say, look at your coming month. Don't look at your coming month. Look at your coming week. And look where your automatic yeses are. We all have them. You know, these things that I've already said yes to. And I know for me, I feel like if I said yes 12 years ago, I'm still committed. And I think we need to reevaluate our yeses on a regular basis. There are just some things that we outgrow or our life can't say yes to them anymore. And so if you are feeling overwhelmed, what is it that you are saying yes to because you want people to like you? You want to be in a position of authority or power. You want people to respect you. And so if we're working and we're obliged out of any sense other than God is calling us to that position, then it needs to be reevaluated. And so this could be commitments that you've made outside of your job, extra stuff that you've decided to do, maybe your kids' school, maybe church commitments. And I'm not asking a bunch of women to go and quit a bunch of stuff that they're supposed to be doing. But do we not have faith that God, who has called each of us into his service, has enough people for what he wants to accomplish if we show up for what we are supposed to do? And,
you know, praying.
And let's just say, if you're feeling overwhelmed all the time, I guarantee you there is stuff on your calendar that God has not put there.
So I've experienced that this week. You know, I had that realization. I just added one more thing and it tipped me over the edge. And sometimes it takes tipping over the edge to find where the edge is.
Right. Because if you're able to put everything on there and everything's on your plate and you're just, you know, walking along and everything's great, we get the sense that we could take on more. Hmm. And we have to experience that pushback in order to make those clarifying decisions. You're absolutely right, Amy.
All right. This one is, I think, somewhat related. She said, the tools and tips in the book are great, but do you ever still have one of those days where you feel a sense of overwhelm threatening to drown you? If so, what are the main strongholds you cling to help you pull yourself back up out of the deep?
Oh, all the time. You know, this is not a book that says, follow these three steps and you'll never be overwhelmed again. My purpose in writing the book, and I didn't really figure this out until Sherry and I finished the book, is for when you're overwhelmed, how to fight your way back to peace. Mm. And so, yes. So the things that I hold on to are, one, recognizing the size of my plate. I am not one of these people who has unlimited energy. I know people like this. Mm-hmm. They get up early in the morning and they stay up late at night. They get joy from working on projects. And that is not me. I love sleep. Sleep is my happy place. And so I know that I need that to be restored. And even on the craziest of days, I allow myself rest. And the other thing is 100% Sabbath. Sabbath is, I will fight, kick, and scream for a Sabbath, where I was never like that before. Mm. And so the beginning of the week and the ending of the week are very, very important to me, not just spiritually, but mentally and physically. And so, yes, I still get overwhelmed, but I can get back to a place of peace. And I'm saying no more than I've ever said before in my life. And my no's are freedom. When I say no, oftentimes I'm initially sad because I feel like I'm disappointing somebody, but my yeses are joy filled. Hmm. Like I feel called to those yeses, mm-hmm, instead of, well, I'll do it because nobody else will do it. So many of our yeses are martyr yeses, and there's joy for nobody. There's a temporary relief for the person who's asking us, mm-hmm, but then they get to deal with you. You know,
oh,
and we've all had them in our lives and we've all been that in our lives. And so I love dealing with people who give me qualified no's, but joyful yeses, because I know that they are all in. And I love that.
That is so good.
Say that again.
People who will give me qualified no's, like, I've thought about it, I've prayed about it, this is a no, but I still love you, Kathy, and I still want to do things with you. I still want to, it's a firm no, it's qualified. Mm. But then there's the joyful yes, like there's nothing I would rather do. And I'm not doing all these things I shouldn't do, so I have the freedom to do the big yeses. And I love that. I love working with people like that.
I love that distinction. I love that distinction.
One of the things you brought up was Sabbath. This was a great question that we got. This woman talked about how she had prepared for the Sabbath. She was like all into the idea of the Sabbath. Right. And then the Sabbath came.
Yes.
And she has a 2-year-old who kind of wrecked the Sabbath.
Right.
She's asking, so she said, is this really just an internal thing and not an external thing? Or how do we deal with a Sabbath that still has, you know, people involved?
Pesky humans getting in our way. Okay. So let me be completely honest. I embraced Sabbath it fully and without reserve when my kids were older. So I get that I have not done it like this, but here is what I will say. It has to be a physical manifestation as well as a spiritual, mental, and emotional. And I know with a 2-year-old, nobody's saying you get to lock them up in the closet until Monday morning. I get that. But here is what I would say is, when I was a young mom, when the baby slept, when the 2-year-old napped, I was running around doing dishes. I was making sure that laundry was going. And so I would say that one time that week, that's when I get to rest. I get to do what it is that is restorative and refilling to me. And the other thing is I'm trying to prep throughout the week for my Sabbath. So I'm trying to make meals ahead. I'm trying to say, hey, I can do laundry on every day except for my Sabbath. Because what it is saying, you know, that mental list that is hanging over you all week, there's one day you get to be free from much of it. Mm-hmm. And so there's still the day-to-day stuff to keep the humans alive. We understand that that needs to happen. But as much as you can, pulling back on that practice. And here's what I think is so great when you're trying to do this when your kids are little, is that they get to see the different kinds of mom. Mm. They get to see the 6 day a week mom, and then they get to see the Sabbath mom. And so maybe the Sabbath mom likes to sit on the floor and play with the 2-year-old, whereas 6 day mom is really making sure that all the things are done, because there's so many things to be done. I get that. But to say, okay, is there something special we could do on Sundays that's different? Even if it's putting a blanket down in the living room and eating on, I know I'm saying this with a 2-year-old and people are like, you're crazy. I get it. But just doing something different to break up the Monday through Sunday and say, we are committing this day to different. And so, I understand that it's going to be a growth process to find your own Sabbath, especially when you have little kids, but there are ways to do it. I honestly believe that.
I love your idea of finding ways to make it special and do things that aren't done any other day.
Yeah. I mean, I even do that for me and Roger, and it's just the two of us. But we went through 11 years of marriage never having like a special breakfast. But now it's like one day a week, and I'll make French toast or something like that. And it's just, you know, this is a day to linger a little bit. And it's just, maybe it's more mental than it is anything else, but it's a day of calming and quieting and lingering.
Well, and maybe she can negotiate something with her spouse. When I think back to my childhood, on Sundays, we said it was family day. We did go to church on Sunday mornings, but the rule was you could go play at a friend's house or have a friend over any other day, but not on Sundays. On Sundays, it was just our family. One of the things that my dad did a lot is he would take my brother and I, and we would go swimming. We had an indoor swimming pool at the university near us, and we would go swimming. And when I look back on that was my dad's way of doing something fun with us and engaging, and it was relaxing for him, but it gave my mom a break.
Yeah, your mom was
I know. My mom just never really went swimming. And as a child, I was like, why doesn't she like to swim? And now as a mom, I'm like, she was like, hallelujah, the house is quiet.
Yes. Well, and Kathy, I think your point on that is so important, because when you said once a week when the kid is down for the nap, mom can not do all the frantic work, I started hyperventilating like, no, that's when you, but that's the point. That's when, you know, whatever is restful for her, she can do for herself. And I'm betting there's a lot of our listeners who are going to think, well, that's lazy. That's being a slacker.
Yeah, no, it's trusting God with your time.
So
and,
good.
You know, he's not messed up when he says, I want you to have a Sabbath. God did not make a mistake. There was not a little typo. Sabbath is so much about trust. And it seems so weird, but it really is one of the hardest ways to trust God, is to say, God, you're going to accomplish what I can't. So I give you this small offering to say, I'm going to rest and trust in you, and that the world will not fall apart if I'm not carrying it on my shoulders.
That's an amazing thought. And the thing that I thought of that piggybacked on that is, why do we say, oh my gosh, it's so hard to take a Sabbath? What a gift. What a gift from a God that says, don't work today. You really need to rest. Why do we resist that? It's crazy, isn't it?
It's because the world tells us that it's all up to us. It really does. So we're having to fight the world. You know, I mean, we looked at it, the guy gathering wood on the Sabbath, you know, he was doing it for what he felt were good reasons. Obviously, he was trying to provide for his family. And God said, but I told you, I told you I was going to provide for you. So why the hustle? Why do you feel like you have to hustle 7 days a week? I know you're not lazy. You're hustling 6 days a week. But the seventh, instead of hustle, trust.
Head over to gritandgracegirls.com/episode42, where you'll find some great freebies from Kathy and Sherry. This week's Digging Deeper download, Bible verse art, and transcript.
We hope you've enjoyed episode number 42 of Grit and Grace, Good Girls Breaking Bad Rules.
Join us next week when we'll be talking with Jill Savage, author of No More Perfect Marriages.
For today, grow your grit, embrace God's grace, and when you run across a bad rule, you know what to do. Go right on ahead and break it.
Worst writer. I just need to.
Oh, I just my goodness. Love that a woman with how many books? You have 14.
17.
17 books says I'm the worst writer.
You know you're not allowed to say that this year anymore after this. You're allowed to say I'm not a speller and I'm not an editor, but you are not allowed to say I'm not a writer. Not in my presence anyways, because I will rise up and I will tell you you're wrong.
I do like to write. I just, you know, when it's like, that blog post is due Tuesday, it's like, oh.